Yeah, don't get us wrong. There's still going to be plenty of randomness to the show.
Of course, that's the name football, of the show. The other name is off topic.
But this is football.
What you want, we've got, and it might be hard to listen, but it makes your rage glisten. Our voice is about the games. And you know, we talk about the latest goings, more so than any other, and our Mountain West matters. Well, will you? You listen to this podcast too. And you rant about this podcast too. Just a site where Jeremy analyzes some matches, and Kiss can grin the bridges. We do some good interviews. And you know, from Fresno all the way to Boise, from Logan down to Esty, they're calling out our name. Where will you? You listen to this podcast too. And you love this podcast too.
Welcome into the week eight. That is week eight Mountain West football recap. Our website here, MWC Connection, as always. We passed 2,800 likes on Facebook. Thank you for that. That's Mountain West Connection. And Twitter, MWC Connection. Jeremy Moss here with maybe a happy Matt Kenerly. Happier Matt Kenerly, maybe?
Relieved?
There we go.
Our long regional nightmare is over. Although now it's the next stage of that, you know, because now we have the interim coach that we have to deal with. And then there's another head coaching search. But that's another that we'll get to that a little bit later. I'm not going to get ahead of myself.
We'll just say adios, Tim Drueter. It was good. It was good when he had Pyle's players to perform well.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
We'll get to the firing and stuff. Matt was at the press conference earlier today. There's a lot of stuff to get to. We'll talk about that. Allegedly, a coach is already in place, but we, like I said, we'll get all the Fresno talk in one chunk.
Okay.
So if you don't care about that, you can just listen to normal. If you do care about that, fast forward. So we may break that out in a separate little show here if you want to listen to our coach speak, but we'll see. We'll see how it goes. See how my technology works today, the time I have, but we had a long week. Things got started Thursday. That first game, which was amazing. Well, no. Let's rephrase that. It was not amazing. It was close. Mm-hmm. BYU and Boise State, 28-27. Broncos win despite being -5 in the turnover margin and blowing what a 14-point lead. Should have been a lot bigger margin of victory for them. Yeah.
So, like, I didn't get a chance to watch most of it just because I was in class for the majority of the game. Can you tell me what happened besides like the really weird highlights? Like I remember reading and seeing the highlights about, for instance, you know, BYU's, you know, ill-fated fake punt from the back of their own end zone, which kind of makes me think, you know, Kalani Sitake was maybe playing NCAA 14 a little too much the night before, you know, going for it on every fourth down conceivable. But
yeah,
you know, and beyond that, you know, like what was the breakdown between like, you know, good Brett Rypien and bad Brett Rypien? Because I do see that he threw two pick sixes, but at the same time that he also threw for over 400 yards.
So I did watch this entirety. It started off big, like Boise State, BYU couldn't stop anything. Boise's up 14-0. This is looking to be a blowout of epic proportions. Like, and BYU's defense is pretty good. Like, they have players on their team, like we discussed. Good linebackers, good secondary. D-line, questionable, but no pass rush to speak of. But everything else, like, there's a reason they got those two pick sixes.
Yeah.
They're pretty good, but, like, this was just Brett Rypien. Like, first drive, the first touchdown was a 76-yarder to Jeremy McNichols, partly because there was a breakdown. One of the linebackers thought there was help over the top, mm-hmm. and so McNichols was wide open and just boat raced everybody for 76 yards.
Uh-huh.
And then on the next touchdown, it was a little bit longer drive, like an 8-play drive. But Rippon completed two passes, I want to say. Three passes. Spurbeck had the touchdown, 3 for 3. He started off good, but here's where it kind of got shady. Like, Boise's defense came to play. Like, we know they've been better. They are pretty good. And one thing to note, BYU was without Jamal Williams in this game, the running back. That's what a big matchup you all wanted to see, Williams versus McNichols. Apparently, he injured it Monday. Nobody knew about it. Even me and other people around town who cover that BYU team as well, what I do, didn't know there's any injury. He was warming up normally as he was. He's a pretty joyful guy, runs around, has fun,
yeah.
Talks to fans. He apparently aggravated an ankle injury in warm-ups and was out the whole game. And so they brought in Squally Candles. That's an issue as well. Boise's rush defense has been okay, not versus New Mexico, but that was a big deal. But the defense did well the first little bit. Actually, the whole game, the defense did great for Boise State. But here's where it kind of got out of hand. Boise missed a field goal. I'm not sure if this one was blocked or a miss. I don't recall because they had one of each. No, this one was blocked. Yeah, first one was blocked. It was the 32-yarder. So they were really close, but penalties also hurt them as well because they ended up like first and goal at the 5. Got pushed back to first and goal. There's a holding play, or I believe it was. Oh no, unnecessary roughness on the offense. Mm-hmm. Great. How does that happen? At the 5, so it pushes you back. End up getting fourth and goal at the 14. It's blocked. BYU goes down and scores. This is the only drive where BYU did something substantial, in my opinion. However, they're also aided by a pretty good special teams return to midfield. They kick the field goal, and then the pick sixes happen. Like, they weren't terrible throws, but they could have been better. But the pick six, like, this isn't like a blown coverage, like you've seen a guy supposed to do an out route, but it goes deep, and a guy jumps on the route. Neither of these were like that one bit. These were just good interceptions, and they're almost identical, both down the sideline. And all the Boise State linemen who tried to tackle, who was it Deion Lake and Fred Warner, decided to hit him high instead of going low. And so you hit him high, he just kind of brushed you off, essentially. BYU had good blocking, but these were interceptions that were just amazing plays on the defenders. They weren't terrible throws for the most part. They weren't great, obviously, interception, but if Boise would have gone low, because both these guys were tightrope in the sideline, and they got about a 50-yard touchdowns off of those plays. So it wasn't anything like a blown coverage or a tipped ball that was just kind of funky, or just something that was overthrow or underthrow or miscommunication. These are just good interceptions, good plays where these guys made great plays. I'm saying a million times, but they just made it happen. It was not what we've seen with Brett Rippon before, where he just throws it to a weird pass and nobody's there. So that's how the two touchdowns happened, but that... But Boise, again, they should have crushed him. Like, let's go to that fake punt. You saw that fake punt, correct?
I saw the highlight of it afterwards, yes.
Did you look closely to how it was set up? Did you see the behind view a little bit of it?
Yes.
So let me ask you this. Did you know it was a fake punt, or did you think it was a called fake punt after the snap or something?
I mean, I have no idea. I wouldn't be able to tell the difference between the two.
I'm just asking because some people could, for me watching, and afterwards, we knew afterwards, so that's why I'm asking, because we knew afterwards this was a design, or actually halftime, a designed fake punt at that position. Mm-hmm. So with Johnny Linehan, he does the rollout, and when guys do the rollout, a rugby-style kick, they sometimes have the option to go if they're not covered.
Yeah.
And this guy played rugby, so he's pretty athletic, so if he were to run and do it, he could probably do a play like this, and he knew that play is in the book. At halftime, he's like, I knew it was coming, I didn't know it was coming there. You're at 4th and 19. At your own 4 or 5 yard line, and clearly for me watching, this was a clear design. Even before I knew about it, a clear designed fake punt off the bat. The way the linemen were blocking, I don't know if it's Kalani Sitake, their special teams coach Ed Lamb, but like you said, was just mad. Were they watching the Bleacher Report video of the high school coach who doesn't go for it when they did the live stream of their high school game last week? I don't understand that play anywhere in the field. If you're at midfield, 4th and 19, I still wouldn't call that play. Had it worked, I would still say it was the dumb play.
So is this a matter of more Boise State almost gave this game away rather than BYU almost winning it?
I think so, because after that punt, BYU or Boise State, did they have, I want to say they had first and goal, I think. Let me see here real quick. Got the drive chart here. They were first and 10 at the 14. And so they end up getting third penalties again and stuff. They end up being at the 9-yard line. I don't think this drive chart's right, because how can you have 3rd and 15 at the 9? Whatever. Oh, that's the wrong team. Sorry, that's the wrong one. Sorry. I'm looking at the wrong one before. They got the ball at the... apologies, I was one step ahead. They got the ball first and goal at the 2.
All right.
First and goal at the 2, and then there was a sportsmanlike conduct, pushed him back, so ended up kicking from the 13-yard line, and a missed field goal. And so... right there is basically that 2 first and goals. That's 2 touchdowns right there. That could be 28 points, 28 nothing, 28-3. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Right off the bat, right there. Even if they had to pick 6, 28-10. So this is a game. You're right. This is a game where Boise should have just smoked them. They just were not in control in a couple of situations. Because I think I talked with you before, or maybe somebody else. But if you look at the drives BYU had, everything was a short field. That first field goal, like I said, the kick return to midfield, 2 pick sixes. The only drive that was anything of note was that final drive where they attempted a game winner and couldn't do it. Everything else was short drives that they went 30 or 40 yards and got field goals. The defense held, 6 points, I think?
Their longest drive was only 58 yards, and it was their last touchdown drive late in the third quarter, or midway through the third quarter.
But yeah, oh, that 8-play 58 yarder.
It was their their last drive, their kind of last gasps drive. It was only 50 yards, but that was it. Like their longest drive after that was only 36 yards for that first field goal. So I kind of see what you mean, that luckily for Boise, they weren't able to do more with the turnovers they were given, because off the 5 turnovers they had, they got 17 points out of it. And
yeah, a lot of points.
It could have been a lot worse if they had turned some of those, missed field goals into touchdowns. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's, I was thinking during the game, like, this is going to be Utah State last year, Air Force or New Mexico games where they had so many turnovers and blew it. But Brett Rippon played okay, but he had all the picks. And then the one time I'm like, all right, let's just run the ball. Let's not throw it. McNichols gets it stripped from himself.
Yeah.
I'm like, come on, how does this happen? So on that, we mentioned that final drive. Did you happen to catch how the game officially ended?
Yeah. What was it? I'm trying to remember exactly what it was. It was a few days ago. Is that kind of weird Hail Mary looking thing, right?
Yeah, like that drive, like a couple of things. Like knowing what BYU fans like to say, they're, oh, we got the senior quarterback, the experience. You can't take a sack middle of the field.
Bring Tanner Mangum for that.
Exactly. Bring him in. He can actually throw the deep ball, right?
Yeah, at least we know they can, yeah.
But, like, Taysom Hill taking the sack midfield was a great play by defense for Boise State. He should have chucked it out of bounds, wasted timeout. But the weird thing was, I noticed on the sideline, like, they had a field goal chance to win the game, and then Boise kind of bailed them out with that timeout when there was a false start right before.
Yeah.
But the weird thing was, they had the timeout, they get the field goal. I'm watching the sideline, like, I'm watching the play clock, I'm watching the kicker. Normally, you want to give your kickers a good enough time. Like, if you're going to do a field goal, you have everybody on the sideline ready to go. The field goal unit's on the side, so when the play's over, the prior play, you run out there, give your guy enough time and do whatever he needs, like to get set or just to be ready, because it's a longish kick, 44 yards. The BYU place kicker was doing his back step like with 7 seconds on the play clock. So he barely got a chance to look and go, so I don't know what the deal with that is. Kicks it, blocked. Because it's behind the line of scrimmage, they get one more chance, and Hail Mary falls short.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
There we go.
That was a very long game, and maybe that was the one game, the bad ripping game that they're good with. You know what I mean?
A win is a win is a win, and I don't think Boise State fans are complaining after this weekend.
Yeah, and especially the past couple years of how these games have gone. So we'll make up for this long recap by talking about San Diego State and San Jose State.
Well, do we want to give it roughly 90 seconds?
Probably. It was 42-3.
And just say it went about exactly as we expected it to.
Reasonably close for about a quarter.
Yeah. I mean, San Jose State did get a field goal fairly early. And then it kind of went off the rails from there.
Really, I think just the outcome, like the difference was more than I thought, because when they played Fresno, 17-3.
Yeah.
Even though that was still a dominant performance in that game, but the points weren't there. But there was a joke I made about Christian Chapman making an interception to San Jose State. And I think I joked about bringing our good friend Chris Andres out of hiding on Twitter because I mentioned a San Diego State quarterback. because he replied to something, but it was just a beatdown. They brought in Josh Love for San Jose State. The running game wasn't there. Passing game wasn't really there. And Pumphrey broke Marshall Faulk's record for rushing touchdowns. Rashad Penny had three touchdowns, two for Penny or Pumphrey, five each total. No, sorry, not each total. Five each would be just, well, it could happen. You never know, but they crushed them. What else is there to say?
Well, I mean, guess I think we can see. I was going to say, I think looking for, you know, the defense to kind of leave no doubt this time around. And, you know, if you look at some of the numbers, that's exactly what they did. They had five sacks as a team and they had nine tackles for loss. And, you know, San Jose State, I'm trying to look at what they were averaging per play.
2.4 rushing, 3.8 passing. So about 3 yards a play.
They averaged 3.2 yards per play. The Spartans did. Not good.
No, bluntly, not good. Good analysis.
Yeah. So, and I mean, if you take away their two long passing plays, because I think they may have had like two plays over 20 yards, you know, it was pretty ugly from almost the get-go. And I mean, I think it's a credit too that, you know, San Diego State, even when they let Danelle Pumphrey have a little bit of rest later on, Rashad Penny, 9 carries, 105 yards, 3 touchdowns. So, you know, even when he's gone next year, I think they'll probably be okay without him.
I think they'll be okay as well. Also, real quick, we'll get bull stuff up later, but Jerry Palm has Aztecs in the Cotton Bowl.
Oh, yeah. That'll be fun.
He does, and I redid my put up a new ranking, kind of pecking order. Put Aztecs fourth for the group of five since Houston lost and South Florida lost Friday night, so... Because my really quick on that, I put Boise undefeated, Western Michigan, Navy, and then Aztecs. Does that seem about? What do you think of that?
That sounds about right to me at this point.
And I put Troy at the very bottom. I think. Sorry, Troy.
Well, they're the Sun Belt team. I think if you're coming from the Sun Belt, you got to go undefeated.
Yeah, I put them. I think behind somehow if a two-loss AAC West team, like say Houston gets back in somehow, or say Navy loses or Memphis, I put them behind them. So it'll take a lot for them to get there, but. Mm-hmm. Aztecs have a shot. Keep winning. You got a chance. You know what I mean? Beat Boise State at the end of the year. One loss. I know Jeff Sagarin likes Western Michigan more than most. I use that ratings a little bit, but Aztecs went out. They're clearly in the discussion.
Definitely.
All right. So let's get to Saturday. You don't see what I'm doing right now, Matt, but I'm doing my fist shake to Time Warner Oceanic again.
Why? Because you didn't see the upset of the weekend?
No. Did you see my tweet about the interception for Air Force? Against Air Force?
I did not see that, but why don't you talk?
I put a retweet and I put, can I get an artist rendering of that interception?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I could have thrown a better interception than that.
I don't know. I thought it was clever to see what happened.
I mean, it wasn't Nate Romine's best game. Let's put it that way.
Oh, we had one guy. You see the guy on Twitter going back and forth about how Nate Romine sucks?
Yeah, I saw
that. Did you see what it come down to, why he thinks he sucks?
Because he's not a good passer?
Well, no, he bet on the game and lost 100 euros. That's why.
Yeah, that'll do it, too.
Exactly.
And I mean, we should probably tell people Hawaii won this game, by the way.
34-27
in overtime. In double overtime.
Double. 3 points away from being undefeated in the Mountain West as well.
And, you know, if you look at some of the numbers, too, like you kind of have to wonder how it happened, because in a lot of respects, you know, Air Force really kind of controlled this game. You know, they had two sacks. Hawaii didn't have any. You know, the Warriors did manage 9 tackles for loss, which is probably more important because, of course, Air Force, you know, relies heavily on their running game. But, you know, the Falcons had almost 400 yards rushing on the ground. They held Hawaii, which we talked about in our preview, to just, you know, 75 yards as a team. You know, Paul Harris and Diosemi St. Just only had 71 carries on, or 71 yards on 16 carries, which is not what you would have expected.
And 25 on one run.
This was all about Drew Brown.
Drew Brown show, bring it on.
Because we talked about, you know, is he going to be able to rebound? And, yep. I mean, if you look at his box score, you know, he did have a couple of interceptions, which, you know, really I think they came at pretty critical junctures, but, you know, he had 312 yards, completed about 2/3 of his passes, had 3 touchdowns, including the, you know, 2 touchdowns in the overtime periods. This was a big win for the Warriors. And I think, conversely, you kind of have to look at Air Force and think, you know, where do they really go from here?
Yeah, they've lost 3 in a row. Yeah, no, not joking aside, but Nate Romine played probably his worst game almost ever. 1 of 10, a pick, and 20 yards. He had the one big running play for 41 yards. But give credit to Hawaii's defense. Like, Air Force averaged, again, only 4.5 yards on the ground. They got, yeah, they got 389 yards. But they held, like, the 9 TFLs. They held Air Force. Like, a big thing we say when you play these teams, New Mexico, Air Force, don't give up big plays, big running plays. And Hawaii stopped them from making huge plays. Yeah, they grounded out a lot of yards. But Tim McVay did pretty well, 11 for 78. Shane DeVern had 98 yards. Jacoby Owens is held in check. But they did, like, if you're looking at the long yard plays, they only had, I believe, 4 plays over 10 yards rushing.
Yeah, I think
against
right.
them. And so, pretty big deal.
That I don't want to overlook is that, you know, among those 9 tackles for loss, they also had 2 really critical fumble recoveries as well. You know, and credit to Jelani Tavai, who I think very quietly could be having an all-conference year, because he had 13 tackles and he had 2.5 tackles for loss and one of those fumbles. And they turned those into points both times. I believe they ended up with a short field after the first one and, you know, got that first touchdown out of it late in the first half going into halftime. And then later on, you know, they got, you know, they went backwards, so they weren't able to convert as much as you would have hoped. But, you know, they did create turnovers and they got points out of it, which is not what you might have expected coming into this game.
Yeah, I don't know to make of Air Force to, like, you give credit to Hawaii, obviously. They go on. This is also a road game, too. It's in Colorado Springs.
Exactly.
They go out and beat them, which Hawaii's been pretty awful away from home for a while, past couple years. But I don't, like, again, let's, like, go to Air Force. They've lost 3 in a row. We thought they could be, like, not just us, but a lot of people felt after they beat Navy, smooth sailing to facing 11-0 Air Force versus 11-0 Boise State. Yeah. They'll have trouble making a bowl game now. They have Fresno next week, a Friday night as well, which they probably should win that game. Mm-hmm. Army's no slouch this year. Rams showed up pretty big versus UNLV. They have Boise State go to San Jose State. They need 2 wins. They probably will get it, but they might struggle to finish above 6-6.
I mean, I think the secondary is going to have to key any kind of turnaround, because I think we both expected a lot from them coming into the year, and they got exposed in this game. Like, if you look at Hawaii's chunk plays, it's basically qualified as, you know, anything more than 15 yards. The Warriors had 8 of them, but among those 8, you know, 7 of them were more than 20 yards, including the 2 touchdowns, you know, late in the game, like in the fourth quarter and in overtime. So, yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, if the Air Force is going to turn it around, they're going to have to figure out how to defend the pass a little bit more, because this looked a little shaky in the last few weeks.
Yeah, and they still had Roland Latipo was still there. I know he's been hurt a bit. Weston Stillhammer is there, but Latipo did have 2 pass breakups, but maybe they're just going a different direction. Not seeing this one, it's hard to tell or recall from a couple weeks ago. But we thought this defense, like we all said, after they basically shut out Navy, this defense is finally good since when they had Tim Drueter being their DC. But it's not. This is a bad defense.
I mean, I don't know that it's, I mean, it's going through a rough stretch. I think we can both agree on that. Like, they're roughly middle of the pack in the conference right now. Actually, they're still 4th in the conference, just as far as, you know, opponents' quarterback rating on defense. And they're, you know, they're middle of the pack in, you know, yards per attempt. They're only giving up 7.5 yards on the year. I think we both expected them to make a few more plays week in and week out, mm-hmm. maybe forcing turnovers or things like that. You know, and that really just hasn't been here in the same way that it was last year. They only have 5 interceptions on the season, where last year I think they had last year they only had 11. But I think we both consider them to be much better than they were last year. So they're not that far away. I think they just need to create more opportunities for their offense.
Yeah, we'll see how they go going forward. And Hawaii, like, they legitimately have a chance. Like, we were joking, like, last week, oh, there's no chance bowling. They they do need to win seven games. We'll get move on this quickly, but they the rest of their schedule plays up nicely to maybe get seven total wins because they get New Mexico at home, which it makes they could that's a winnable game. They go to San Diego State, probably not. Host Boise, probably not. But at Fresno and UMass, those are three winnable games on the schedule, three of the five. I wouldn't be surprised one bit if they do end up going 7-6.
It's more fun when Hawaii is at least half decent, I think.
And they are this year.
Yeah, so it's going to be fun to watch them down the stretch. Oh, wait.
Oh. Here, wait, but here's this real quick, just so you know, the Boise State game is on CBS Sports Network.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a small comfort.
The one game we're going to give out tickets to starting probably Monday or Tuesday, so pay attention to that.
Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. With Hawaii playing well, these tickets are probably a bit more coveted than they were last year that we attempted to and did not work out at all. All right, next game, we'll actually get to the Fresno State game last, so we don't need you guys, if you guys want that, fast forward a few minutes here. But next game, Colorado State versus UNLV. Rams spotted the Rebels five first half touchdowns. I think that's a bit too many.
Nick Stevens is back. That's what matters to me.
2015 Nick Stevens.
He was he was more or less the same guy that I expected him to be all along. And, you know, I'm glad he could join us about halfway through the year. Because, you know, if you look at his line, he had basically far and away his best game of the season. You know, he completed 75% of his passes, 237 yards, two touchdowns. You know, no turnovers or anything like that. It was a, you know, clean game overall. And, you know, they were very balanced on offense, too. Like, they had, you know, 237 yards passing, 230 on the ground. And they basically just ran away with this game early and hid.
They did, and Marvin Kinsley made an appearance for the Rams running the game. So they had a three attack, who those three guys, Kinsley, Dawkins, and Matthews, had about 180 yards. So four touchdowns. It's, yeah, UNLV made an effort in the second half, but Dalton Sneed played pretty, let's just say it, pretty bad. 7 of 23. He rushed a game which we thought might be an issue, or not an issue, but a strength. Charles Williams and Lexington Thomas combined for 12 carries for under 60 yards. Dalton Sneed had a nice 95-yard game, but those guys, I probably should look if there was any injury issue, but probably not if you're down that big, you're throwing a lot. But maybe Marty English has taught these Rams guys how to tackle.
I mean, maybe. I mean, I think at a minimum, he may have taught them how to create a few turnovers, because this is another situation where, you know, Dalton Sneed, I think it was a tip drill interception, if I remember correctly. But, you know, Colorado State forced an interception. They forced a fumble. And UNLV missed an early field goal. And between those three things, you know, Colorado State was able to take those opportunities and turn them into points.
Yeah, and the comeback, you got to give credit to UNLV for not just folding over and losing 60-0. So yeah. They did outscore 23-7, and the Rams obviously kind of held back a little bit, weren't going down the field as much passing, mostly just controlling the game and extending drives, not wanting to give up either interceptions, turnovers, or punts after a quick 90-second drive of three plays. So, but again, UNLV, the comeback was nice. They made it reasonably close, because I saw this 35-0. I'm like, oh, screw this. I'm not going to tune in much after anymore. I was going to see what was going on, but kind of saw what happened. But yeah, Nick Stevens, like, I don't know what the deal was with him week one versus Colorado. I know Colorado's really good, despite their 10-5 win over Stanford this weekend. That was pretty ugly.
Hey, you know, Stanford's a decent team. Let's not knock a 10-5 result.
I just, the result itself, 10-5. That's all I'm kind of laughing at. But again, he played terrible that first game. He's the starter. He's fine. It could be a situation. He knows he's the guy, so he's not going to screw up or not. Pressure's kind of lifted where they know Balta's not going to come into the game, and obviously Colin Hill's out. But good. Good victory for the Rams. They're on track to probably head to a bowl game themselves. The UNLV, it happens. The comeback is nice, but it happens. So let's move on to the actually, let's take a quick timeout here really quick before we get to the next game, which was another blowout. All right, next game, Louisiana Monroe versus New Mexico. 59-17. Kudos to the Lobos. Kudos. And there was a defensive score in this game. Did you notice that? A defensive Lobo score.
Big shocker. Raise your hand if you have that one. Well, not only that, I mean, their special teams really came back too. I think that had been kind of MIA more often than not, but you know, Elijah Lilly had a 93-yard kickoff return to start the second half, actually. And you know, that's the kind of big play that I think fueled them a couple points last year. So to see that they can, you know, come up with that again is kind of a nice development, I think, going forward.
Yeah, this game, I was going to, because I thought of all the games this evening, because the Mountain West has been kind of nuts in some of these games, I thought this might be a more competitive game to watch. I had it on, I paused it, got some dinner, accidentally changed the channel, so I had to go back to it. So I lost my 30 minutes of recording. Noticed it was like 28-0 or something. I'm like, huh. So look what happened. I'm like, oh, good for them. I'll just wait till the next game to start, really, to get into it. But 28 first quarter points. Lamar Jordan did get to start. We thought we might see Austin Apodaca again, but I guess he's still kind of banged up. But what do you want to say? The average is not over almost 10 yards a carry, man. 476 yards.
Yeah, and I mean, they put together, it wasn't like they were, I mean, they had one quick strike. You know, Tarion Gibson had an 83-yard touchdown run in that first quarter. But if you look at their drive chart, they had a lot of really long, methodical drives. You know, their first score was off the interception, but you know, they had 4 plays, 72 yards, 11 plays or 85 yards, you know, the 1 play for 83. They actually had a 59-yard run that was, I guess it was ruled a fumble on this drive chart right here, so I'm not entirely sure what happened. But, you know, even later in the second half when the game was already well out of reach, you know, 86-yard drive, 89-yard drive, 75-yard drive, all for touchdowns. You know, that's kind of what you want to see if you're a Lobos fan. Not only that this team can run the ball, but that they can sustain drives, which, you know, they've been a little bit inconsistent from week to week with that, but they really rebounded in a big way in that regard.
Do you think, and I'm just kind of thinking out loud from prior games, we know they have quick strike capability. Do you think that could be a detriment for this defense? Because if they defense goes out and the other team scores on them because the defense isn't good, and then Tarion Gibson goes out 1 play, 85-yard touchdown, they're back out there again. Do you think that could have might have an issue for sometimes when they score so quickly?
Maybe. I mean, I'm not totally sure, because if you look at some of the numbers, like, I'm not entirely sure who started for Louisiana and Monroe at quarterback. I think, according to this, it was Will Collins, right?
Yeah.
You know, they forced Will Collins into an 0-for-7 start, and then he ended up getting benched for the backup, Caleb Evans, who
he's pretty good.
Ended up going 12 of 15 for 120 yards. So he came off the bench, had an okay game, but on the flip side, they had 5 sacks, which is another way that they really rebounded in a big way. And they really kind of put the clamps on the Warhawks running game too. You know, they only allowed 2.8 yards per carry. So yes and no. I think a lot of it might depend on the opponent, like who they're dealing
with. Well, I did too. I'm just saying in general from games past where they could score one drive. Because you hear it all the time, like when you're Texas Tech or an Oregon is moving the ball or Washington State, they go 3 and out in 45 seconds. And the defense has to come back on. So I was kind of just speaking, not necessarily this game, but other games where it's like, come on, give us a 5-play drive at least. Give us 2 minutes to end the timeout to get a breather here. So I know the defense isn't good anyways, but I just kind of thought about that today. I'm like, well, maybe with the extended drives you mentioned, that could be a reason when they don't have those, not because they're inefficient, but they score 2 plays and defense is back out there. But 59-17, excuse me, pretty it. Don't get me wrong, Louisiana Monroe is not very good this year, but when's the last time, I think I mentioned this a week or two ago, when's the last time New Mexico really beat somebody? I think we mentioned the New Mexico State game from last year, but
I believe it was a few years ago.
2014 maybe, but few and far between for these blowout victories, so take them while you got them, right, Lobo fans?
Exactly.
Next game, there's two, these night games, these 8 o'clock games, I was going back and forth, they were very exciting. Very exciting. This next one, Wyoming Cowboys. Hey, we're talking about Wyoming today. How's that?
Do we get to talk about bowling yet?
Did you like my chant, one more game till bowling or something I put out there?
Exactly.
They are going to go bowling this year, which is, I think, how about, instead of us saying we were wrong last year, I'm just going to say we were a year too early on Wyoming. We were ahead of the curve.
I'm pretty sure Brian Hill just ran for another first down while we were talking right now.
Touchdown.
I mean, can Nevada stop the run at all? Are we sure that they can do that? Like, they know that's a possibility, right? They know that they can stop a running back every once in a while.
I don't know. What's their tackling technique in practice?
I have no idea.
You're exactly. They don't either, so.
Anyway, we should probably mention the final score, which was Wyoming 42, Nevada 34. But really was kind of the Brian Hill show for the Cowboys. You know, Josh Allen ended up having a pretty quiet evening on the whole. He was only 8 of 12, 135 yards. Brian Hill, though, he had himself a game. You know, 29 carries, 289 yards, and 3 touchdowns.
Career high 3 touchdowns. Which I thought, really? I didn't know that. I thought he had 3 before. That's a career high, they said.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's kind of interesting.
It might be rushing touchdowns, perhaps, because he can catch the ball a little bit. But I was like, really? I figured it would tie a career high. But regardless, 289, 56-yarder. He was going where, oh, he's going to be stopped for a 2-yard gain. 5-yard. I remember one play specifically. Brian Hill's going, oh, he gets up there 2 yards. No, he's going 5 yards, 7 yards. Make that a first down for Brian Hill. Dragging guys for 8 yards, essentially, for a first down. I just remember that kind of chuckling about on the call. Like, nope, there's 5 yards. He keeps going, and first down. And, 42-34. This game, because also, really quick on Josh Allen, while he didn't pass very well, he had 2 key rushing touchdowns and 50 yards on the ground to help with the victory. True. And also for having no interceptions again, he's had 2 games. Even though he's, what does he have, 6 interceptions? It's only come in 2 games. 5, or maybe it's 5, whatever it was. He had 4 or 5 versus Nebraska and the 1 in another game. So besides that Nebraska game, he's been pretty clean and pretty efficient. But this game, it was back and forth. Every time Wyoming got up just enough, Nevada comes back in. James Butler makes a run. We're probably burying this as well. Ty Gonji came in for relief for Tyler Stewart, who went down with some, I should look it up, maybe I will in a second, and some sort of injury. In the first half, he goes 27 of 43 for 300 yards and a touchdown. So he came in and played very well to keep them in this game. This is a game where Wyoming just goes up by 14 or 17. Nevada comes back right away to keep it just close enough. And the field goal really hurt. That's the other game. Sorry, I think of the Fresno Utah State. But and so just a back and forth, and you switch over to one game. Touchdown, field goal, come back. It's still a touchdown, a field goal game, but Wyoming had the edge in that first quarter. Basically, that first quarter touchdown did it for him, go up 7-0, and then they basically trade scores the rest of the way almost.
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting is that, you know, Nevada really found big plays in the passing game with Ganji at quarterback that they didn't really have in a lot of past weeks. You know, he ended up having, you know, Stewart had 2 in the first quarter before he got knocked out. Of more than 15 yards, and then Ganji the rest of the way had another 7, right? And a lot of those came, he was able to really extend drives too, which has more or less been a strength of Nevada's all year long, surprisingly. But I mean, you know, if you look at the third down conversions especially, you know, they weren't able to convert, you know, I think it was, you know, they were 2 of their first 7, but like, if you look at the breakdowns, a lot of those were like super long situations. You know, their first 3 were like 3rd and 11, 3rd and 15, 3rd and 15, which is not what you would expect a team to be able to convert with regularity. But then, you know, starting in the second quarter, they converted all but 2 third downs from there to the rest of the game. And, you know, most of that comes down to Ty Ganji making plays in the passing game. You know, he was 10 of 13 on 3rd downs. And that was really where they got most of their conversions from. So do we think that the Wolfpack have a new quarterback now? Like, did Tyler Stewart literally just lose his job?
Maybe. I'm trying to see what the injury was. I know he's just wincing on the ground the whole, like, during that little bit. It was just kind of nasty. Let's see. From Chris Murray, Tyler Stewart's shoulder injury muddles the water. He'll start for next game, so I'm going to try to see exactly what it was. But if Ganji plays that well, here we go. Here's what it is. It's an AC injury, unlikely to play versus New Mexico. That's from last night, or let's see, we're Sunday afternoon, so it was late Saturday night. But as of earlier on Sunday morning, yeah, it's an AC joint injury, so it's those are tough to go through. It's similar if what was it in NFL? Patriots with Garoppolo had an AC joint, was basically shoulder injury, probably pops out of place or something. Not necessarily dislocation, but those are tough to come back through, especially if it's your throwing arm. So I'd look for Ganji to play next week, or Ganji to play next week versus New Mexico. But taking over,
because I mean, he played really well aside from the one interception he threw right at the very end of the game to Logan Wilson,
which I thought was a drop. I didn't, after they were, after the onside kick, they're down eight. They have one last chance with a couple timeouts, and Logan Wilson gets it. But I'm surprised he threw that well, because Wyoming's secondary, like with Andrew Wingard, has been pretty good this year making plays, and he was just able to pass after pass after pass.
I guess we'll see going forward.
They played in Mexico, and he probably will have a good game, but. What's Nevada's record? They're 3-5, and Stewart's a senior. I don't know. I don't know. You probably want to lean toward that. But here's the thing too: as we're about to get to the coaching stuff, is Poling going to lose his job if they don't make a bowl game? And he probably wants to have the best player out there. And who do you think it should be though? Who's better, Stewart? Or I know Ganji's only played a little bit. Who would you put in there?
I mean, I think, you know, from my point of view, we kind of know who Stewart is at this point. He's not a guy who's going to make big plays. Mm-hmm. And if Ganji can add that element to the offense, because, you know, they ran the ball fairly well, too. You know, James Butler didn't get that many carries, but he did have, you know, over 5 yards per carry. And, you know, he did have 6 catches out of the backfield as well for another 43 yards. If Ganji can just be a more explosive passer, I think that can make a difference for this offense. And so I would, if it were me making that decision, I would probably give him an extended look and see what he can do, especially since the schedule kind of softens in the next couple weeks for Nevada.
That's true. And also, you know what? I'd go with him. Hashawn Henderson had a sighting, 7 receptions, 89 yards. My man, Hashawn Henderson.
Nice of him to show up.
That is nice of him to show up. So I plus Ganji can run a little bit. He had 35 yards and a touchdown run. So
there you go.
Whoever's playing the best, if it's healthy, we'll see. I don't know, because the bowl game is if Poling's going to keep his job, he needs to go bowling. And they're sitting at 3-5 with a couple games left on the schedule, and they have, let's see here, it's possible New Mexico, Aztecs, Aggies, Rebels, maybe. Not out of the question.
Not out of the question. I don't know. We'll see what happens.
I can see 2 wins, maybe. All right, let's get to the national nightmare. Regional nightmare is over out there in the Central Valley. Tim Drueter out as head coach.
Yes.
Finally.
Well, do we want to talk about the game first, or do we want to talk about the
Let's do the game first.
38-20 Utah State. It was more or less, if you've been watching Fresno State week in and week out, it was a lot of the greatest hits in a sense, because you know, they really struggled to run the ball again, which, you know, didn't surprise a lot of people. You know, Dontell James only had 80 yards on 29 carries. Chase and Virgil, if you take away his long play, I think I looked up, he only averaged like 4.2 yards per pass. If you take away the 122-yard pass he threw to Delvon Hardaway.
Chase and Virgil looked okay, though. He wasn't terrible.
Well, they just weren't able to throw the ball down the field.
And missing Peck doesn't help either. Aaron Peck was out with an injury.
That's also true. And so, I mean, they were able to sustain more drives on offense than I think they were pretty much at any point this season. You know, they're... First touchdown drive especially, it was 15 plays, 86 yards. If I remember correctly, somebody tweeted it, somebody else in the local media, that was like the longest scoring drive of the season. And, you know, they had other drives later in the game where that were, you know, 77 yards for another touchdown, you know, 65 yards for a field goal. So they were able to put drives together in a way that they really weren't from week to week in a lot of places. So, you know, I give them a little bit of credit for that. They just didn't have any semblance of a downfield game. And then on the flip side, you know, once again, the pass rush was missing in action. And Kent Myers had a pretty good game, all things considered. Like, he didn't get sacked at all, which must have been a nice change of pace for a lot of Aggies fans out there.
For sure.
And, you know, he only had 188 yards, but he was 17 of 29 and he had 3 touchdowns. They didn't have any turnovers or anything like that. And so, you know, I think if you're an Aggies fan, you probably feel good for getting off the schneid and finally getting that first conference win. If you're a Bulldogs fan, you know, now you're kind of facing the unknown.
Mm-hmm. Unknown of joy.
Yeah. We'll see. I mean, we'll see if a new head coach makes any difference at all.
What do you think really quick of that field goal late in the game that was trying to, like, what's the point of that?
Well, I mean, for those of you who didn't watch the game, they were down 31-17. And it was, I'm trying to remember what point it was. It was early in the fourth quarter with about 12 minutes to go.
Mm-hmm.
And they get to the Utah State 32-yard line and they elect to kick a field goal. And I was one of the people that didn't understand it at all.
It was odd because you're not moving the ball well. It still makes it an 11-point game. It's still a 2-score game regardless.
Yeah, exactly. And if you look at the drive chart, I'm trying to remember what exactly the down and distance was on that fourth down. I'm trying to remember exactly what it was.
It was questionable, but wasn't overly long. I think it was like maybe eight yards, I want to say.
It was 4th and 7 at the 32-yard line. So while, you know, I give credit to Cody Cronin for making the field goal because that 49-yarder was a career high.
He crushed it, too.
Yeah, and he crushed it. But at the same time, you know, the very next drive, Utah State marches down the field for
another. Game over.
And, I mean, it wasn't only that, too. But, you know, they had a couple of really critical penalties on that following drive, too. You know, they had an unsportsmanlike conduct. They had a face mask that each cost them 15 yards. And basically made it really easy for Utah State. So, yeah. I mean, you want to see a team that literally has nothing left to lose to just like put it all out there. And that was one of those situations where, you know, me and other people in the local media around here were just saying that, you know, you're supposed to let it all hang out. And they let that chance go. And Utah State made them pay for it. And that might be kind of emblematic of how this entire season has gone, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Also, some people were saying that spread was 14 points. And so,
yeah.
Make it 11.
Yeah, of course.
So half kidding, but you never know. I'm just saying, like, somebody tweeted to us, what's the line of this game? And that's what it was. So, do you want to get to the evacuation of DeRuiter?
Yeah, let's go ahead and get into that. So
go ahead.
DeRuiter's gone. They're going to pay him his full contract. If you didn't see the press conference, I would direct your attention to our Facebook page.
Yes, please.
Mountain West Connection. And you can watch the entire thing because I was there and I watched the entire thing with our athletic director, Jim Barco, and the university's president, Dr. Joseph Castro. And they both emphasized that they're going to pay him, they're going to honor their commitment to him, which is basically paying him the over $3 million that they owe him.
Yeah, $3.11 million is the number.
Yeah. So DeRuiter's gone. And next
Ooh,
week,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's going to be Eric Kitzau at the helm.
So tell people who that is. Who's that?
So he's the offensive coordinator that they brought in from Alabama last year. He's been in this kind of situation before, like when
Kansas.
I think it was 2014. Yeah. I was trying to remember what year it was. But when the Kansas Jayhawks fired Charlie Weiss a couple of years ago, they elevated him to be the primary play caller. And, you know, while this isn't quite the same thing, you know, he's had experience stepping into that situation before on an interim basis. And, you know, in that same year, they almost knocked off TCU. So it's not like he didn't have an impact there. But I have my doubts as to whether that will really change anything. Because if you've been watching the last few weeks, you know, I've talked at length about the fact that, you know, they have some explosiveness in the passing game. But it doesn't show up when you really need it. Like, you know, they have this tendency of getting like really big passing plays when the game is already well out of reach.
When they're playing pre-event, so like who cares?
Yeah. So you know, part of that's the problem. Like, they just don't have any semblance of a downfield passing game, and I don't know exactly how much that's going to change with a new head coach.
And so with that, a couple of things with him, like, he, I think he's the most logical sense, because I mentioned, if you've been paying attention closely enough to the show, if you do, thank you. But I mentioned before that this is kind of the last chance for Drudder. And my point, getting back to where this guy getting the interim tag, outside of the defensive coordinator, wasn't basically everybody a new hire on this team?
I mean, most of the position coaches were, yeah. Like, Ward is new on the defensive coordinator.
South Carolina.
Joe Bernardi is new. He coaches the tight ends.
Well, they reorganized the defensive coordinator from last year. He's still on staff. Isn't he linebackers coach now, I want to say?
Yeah, Nick Toth is in charge of the inside line.
Toth, yeah.
So, you know, I'm just not sure, man, because if you look at the team as a whole, like, the passing offense especially, like, I don't think there's any mistake about this, that, you know, Virgil's going to be the quarterback of the future. And I'm still on board with him being the starter for the remainder of the year. And it might seem dumb from a distance, but, you know, he's learning on the job. And I think what it will come down to is they really need to improve their recruiting efforts. Like, they need to make more of an effort to bring in better offensive linemen. Because, and they've started to shuffle the deck a little bit. Like, I think they have one or two new starters on the offensive line from the beginning of the season. So they're starting to look at that. And I think they need to continue looking at that, because, you know, keeping him upright, keeping him healthy is going to be really critical to the team's success going forward. I mean, if you compare it to what's going on at San Jose State, for example, you know, Kenny Potter is getting killed week in and week out. So we should probably be thankful that the situation isn't quite as dire as that.
Yeah. 20 sacks almost. I want to say 25 sacks, 30 sacks.
It's way more than that. But, you know, my point is that, you know, the offensive line needs work. I don't think anybody's going to argue that. You know, he's a quarterback that I think can thrive if they find the right system, because, you know, Peck is going to be gone next year, but Keyshawn Johnson and Jameer Jordan are going to be back. And they're both very talented, if you ask me.
At the running game, and young guys seem pretty well, I would say. Yeah. People like them.
And Dontell James will be back as well. And when he gets healthy, they'll have, you know, Bryson Oglesby back. They have Jared Rice or Justin Rice. I forget which one's the tight end, which one's the running back.
That's okay. That guy.
But, you know, they will have running backs coming back next year. And, you know, as well as Deontay O'Neal, who got injured earlier this season. So, you know, the offense has a chance to grow together. It's just going to be kind of a long process, and I don't know that it's going to quite happen by the end of this year. So, you know, Bulldogs fans are probably going to have to be patient, which, you know, maybe asking a lot of them at this point, but that's really the only option there is.
There's a couple of things with it. He's the right choice. They play Air Force short week Friday night, and your question was great during the press conference, because your question was, well, tell us what your question was about. So you go ahead. You said it.
So the question was that I asked was, why now? Because if you look at the margins of defeat, you know, they aren't quite as drastic as, you know, some of the results from earlier in the season. Like, they got blown out at Nebraska, right? And they got blown out at Toledo. But, you know, and then, of course, they gave up the 31-point lead to Tulsa. But if you look at, like, the last 3 weeks, you know, they only lost by 5 in Nevada. You know, and they only lost by 2 scores to San Diego State, which, you know, again, it's kind of getting the life sucked out of them on offense more than anything. And, you know, they were within 11 late against Utah State. So they're, you know, if you squint hard enough, maybe you make the argument that there's some progress. And I wish I could remember his answer off the top of my head, but...
Well, what he said, I do recall what he said. Basically, his thing was, because it's not conference play, what if we started the schedule we have? We could be 2-0 in league play heading into San Diego State with a conference title or division title still a possibility. Which, I get his point, because technically, yeah, it's a non-conference game, doesn't mean as much, but... As I told you, we were chatting before, there's a reason LSU fired Les Miles when they did. They didn't want him to have the chance to have this massive turnaround. There's a reason about, I forget how far, how a while back, going back to University of Utah basketball, where they had Ray Giacoletti. They fired him, I think, or said he's going to finish the season, but I don't think postseason was a possibility. But they had like one or two games left, and one of those was the BYU game. And he coached extremely well and beat BYU multiple times in basketball. But they're like, what they're thinking was fire him now because fans will be upset if he beats BYU and gets fired. And so same with LSU, like last year with Les Miles. There's all the hubbub about him being gone, but he ran off at, I think, a 9-win season. That's kind of where Bartko had the opposite effect in this one. Let's see if he can win his job back to keep it. And I bet part of it, I think we'd both agree, was the amount of money. If they somehow, because who did they play first? Was it UNLV, and who was the other conference game?
It was the two-game swing in Nevada. So it was UNLV and then the Wolfpack.
Reasonable games that nothing amazing. Like games they most teams would say, okay, we can beat them. They're not these great teams, Rebels or Wolfpack. So I'm thinking his idea was if they can win these two games or 2-0 in league play, he could save his job and we'll save $1 million or so bucks because we're not going to fire him if he starts off that well.
Yeah. And I guess that makes sense to me. It's just, you know, it's kind of hard when you keep seeing the same trends week in and week out. And I think that was mostly what I was trying to get at. I just probably didn't put it in the proper context when I had the chance.
Hey, no, it's still fair. I don't know why he should have picked it up on it. But so here's where we're at right now. Coaches, before the press conference started, there's a report that it's your favorite pal, Jeff Tedford.
Yeah. Tedford.
What do you feel? Do you think the report's accurate? Because he says it is. It's who is it? George Takataka?
George
Takata. Who is it again?
Yeah. George Takata.
Takata,
I believe he's the local NBC affiliate. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I have thoughts on Jeff Tedford, but I'll save them for the or for the inevitable article.
You sure? Give us a peek. What do you give us a sneak peek? Come on.
I may have laid it out elsewhere. I just don't see the fascination with him. And it's part of this larger concern that I have because a lot of the fan base around here, and I'm sure this is reflective of every fan base, the fans want a Fresno State guy to replace Drudder. And so a lot of the names that you're going to hear about are guys that have Fresno State connections. Not only Jeff Tedford, you know, Lane Kiffin's already been thrown out Trey there. Dilfer. I don't think that's going to happen. Oh, God, let's not get into
just saying Dilfer. Fresno names. I heard, yes. Hold on, what did I hear? Trent Dilfer, OC, David Carr, quarterback's coach.
Oh, God. I just want to roll my eyes so hard. You can't even see it right now, but that's what I'm doing. But, you know, even the more reasonable names, like, you know, and I believe the SEC network or the SEC football Twitter page mentioned Doug Nussmeier as someone who's going to be interested.
Yeah, I saw that as well.
He's a Fresno State guy. So, and, you know, even further down, you know, you're talking about other guys like.
But that was not even a big mention. That was from Dan Wolkin tossing that name out there. And he's the same guy who replied to about Jim Drudder's going to be a hot commodity as a DC.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, even further than that, you know, if you're talking about guys like Tim McDonald, who has no coordinator experience, let alone as a head coach, you know, Tim Skipper is another name that's being thrown around. He's a former Bulldog. Pat Hill is probably going to get his name thrown around quite a bit. So
I think he likes his job broadcasting the games more.
I think you're right. And to me, like the whole thing, just like, it's so limiting. I feel like they really need to keep all of their options open. And the reason I say that is because if you look at like kind of the hiring trends of the last couple of years, what teams do is they more often than not, they hire up and coming coordinators. Mm-hmm. And granted, that's what they did with Drudder, right?
But had that record of a great defense at Air Force and Texas A&M. So you can't say that, like, looking back and bringing him in, you can't say, I thought that was a good move because of what he did. And coupling who they had offensively, figured that would be a good fit. We have offense to go with a defensive-minded coach.
Yeah, I mean, just kind of looking around what other teams are doing in the group of five. Like, to me, what I think Fresno State needs to do, what I hope they do, and that they probably will not do, they need to find someone like PJ Fleck. Because PJ Fleck went to Western Michigan. He didn't have any obvious ties to the university because he played college football at Northern Illinois, if I'm not mistaken. And you know, he was a coach at Rutgers for a couple of years. He was a wide receivers coach for the Tampa Bay Bucks for a year. And then he got hired by the Broncos, and now they're, what, 8-0 now and nationally ranked?
Doing pretty well.
And he stepped into a situation that might have been even worse than the one Fresno State is in right now. And they're neck and neck with Boise State right now for that, you know, group of five New Year's Eve spot. To me, that's the kind of guy they need to keep their eye on. And when I have more time to think about it and write about it, I will come up with my own list of guys that I think they should consider.
Can I give you the one and only
choice? Can I give you the one and only choice?
Or top choice?
Go for it.
Or top choice?
Okay.
Bob Stitt.
I would be okay with Bob Stitt because Bob Stitt knows how to win.
Yeah, for those who don't know, Colorado School of Mines head coach forever. Famously, with the Dana Holgorsen 70 pounding in the Orange Bowl, that jet sweep, fly sweep, whatever it was. Innovative coach. He's now Montana doing pretty good things. And he's a guy like you want. It's not a former Fresno guy, which is, it's fine if it is, but he's an up and comer, but he also has a lot of experience as a head coach.
Yeah, exactly. So to me, we're not going to know anything for like another month, basically.
Yeah, because what's that 14-day period? Is it a state mandate? You have to have a job open for 2 weeks or something?
Yes.
So 14-day period, so anybody can apply, but are they going to accept it? You know what I mean? What are they going to do?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know all the particulars of how that works. So, but I mean, at a minimum, we're not going to know anything until season's end. And so, you know, the rumors obviously are going to swirl around, you know, guys like Kiffin and Tedford mostly. But stay tuned for my take on who they should be, the kinds of people they should be looking at, because it's not Tedford and it's not Kiffin or anything like that.
Really quick, because I guess the Fresno Beast is coming, as we kind of did as well. The or is it Marika Wazorowski? He put a list out there. I'll just go through names really quick. I do have some thoughts on Lane Kiffin really quick. I know we're going long, but I'll mention those in a second. But I don't know if he put in numerical order, but he started one through whatever. Kiffin, Tedford, Steve Sarkisian. Ooh, I don't know. Maybe. You mentioned Tim McDonald.
Wait, do we want to go through? I tweeted about all of these, but do you want to go through them real quick and I can give you my reactions?
Yeah, let's start real quick. We know Keith. I'll start with me and Kiffin really quick. Here's the reason why he could be a good fit. Big schools might be afraid of him because of his he's never been a cordial head coach. With Tennessee and USC, he's always been snippy. People don't like him. And maybe they want to see, like, hey, can he handle a head coaching job where pressure's not there? And so that's where I think Fresno could fit in. If he really wants to be a head coach, and he really wants to, I'm assuming he wants to get back there. Because here's the thing, is Texas going to hire Lane Kiffin if Charlie Strong is gone? Is LSU going to hire him? No.
No.
So my point is go to a job where the pressure's not high and see how you handle yourself there for, yes, obviously if he does well, probably like a 3-year gig. But that's the reason, if you really want to be head coach, that's where he'll probably end up first. And that's the reason why. I think that's everything else I would say no, but that's the reason, if he really wants to be a head coach, he can wait for a bigger job. But ADs want to say, how can you handle yourself as a head coach again? We don't want to pay you $7 million a year to take our program and either A, leave after 4 months, which unlikely, but he's done it before, or just be a bad coach. I want to see it somewhere else first with success, where it's pressure's less, and see if you can handle a program.
My guess is that he's still too expensive for Fresno State.
There's that too. But if he really wants to be head coach and he knows that, like, here's the thing. Like, it's not going to be, like you said, it's not going to be till January. So I doubt Fresno is going to wait that long, first of all, which kind of knocks him off the list. But what he's going to hear in the offseason from his agent, whoever he's talking with on behalf of him for other schools, they're like, there's a lot of question marks or baggage. So I'm thinking another AD that wants to pony up a lot of money wants to see him somewhere else. And so if he really, really wants to be a head coach, this opportunity, probably not this specific one, but it makes sense going this route.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's just to me, it's the financials.
I do too, but if you want to be head coach, and if you win at Fresno and you're making $1.1 million a year or whatever, if they pay him the same, he has enough money. I don't think he needs the money, but he may rather. I don't know what he wants. Does he want a head coaching job more or money more? Or just be Nick Saban's sidekick and wait till he retires? I don't know. So
yeah, who knows?
That's my thought. Tedford, we all know everything. Tedford, it seems like that's a safe choice, right?
Tedford? Yeah.
Even though it may not be really that safe.
I mean, he's a retread.
That's what I mean. Like, we know what you're getting with him.
I suppose, yeah.
So, what about Sarkisian? That's an interesting name, real quick. What is your...
Character issues. Let's move on.
Okay. Tim McDonald. We already kind of mentioned that.
No coordinator experience, and you want to hand him a head coaching job? Next.
He's in NFL, but DB's coach. Tim Trevino? Is that right? Or Trevino, excuse me, Michigan OC?
That's the kind of guy that I would take a long look at, because he's an OC at a successful program. And I think, you know, with Virgil being the quarterback for at least for the next 3 years, I think you need to find a guy first and foremost who can help him develop. So
does he have ties to Fresno at all? Because I'm not familiar with his name.
No.
Okay. Matt Wells, move on. No, not going to happen.
No.
I don't know why that's on there. Justin Wilcox is interesting. The Wisconsin defensive coordinator, previously Washington and Boise State coordinator.
My big thing is I don't know if they're going to double down on a defensive coordinator again after DeRuiter.
Good point. All right, then you got another offensive guy, as we mentioned briefly, Doug Nussmeier, really shot in the dark by Dan Wolkin, who, whatever. I do love Dan Wolkin because he shot down a guy who fired me a job before because he is a dummy and accurately did so. And the reason there was a stink saying it's only half truth was because there was a word maybe might happen. That one word might, it was not definitive, so. Wolkin's okay, but that was just a weird thing. It's like, yeah, maybe Doug Nussmeier. Do you really want we've seen the Florida offense. I don't want the Florida offense at Fresno, do you?
I mean, it couldn't hurt. I mean, anything is better than what we got now.
I'd say that's debatable sometimes.
Well, but again, you know, I think he's the kind of guy who's had success in the past as well. As an OC.
Another DC, which you probably say no on, is Pete Kitawoski, Washington Huskies DC.
That's another interesting one. I bet I don't know much about him off the top of my head, but, you know, Washington is having a very good year, and it's not just on the offensive side of the football.
10-5 Stanford. 10-5.
Keep an eye on as well.
And then Dwayne Walker, another guy who's not I don't think he has any coordinator experience. He's currently the Jags DC.
He flamed out at New Mexico State.
Oh, that's right. Oh, that's him, Dwayne. Oh, yes. Never mind. I was thinking of a different guy. No. Negative. And UCLA, too. So, no. When he was there for part of it. Let's move on. A couple extra names he put on there. Tim Skipper, Florida running backs coach. I don't know. Former Pat Hill assistant. That's the only reason I'm thinking.
Yeah, I don't understand it at all.
John Baxter, special teams coach. Do you want another Brian Polian in town?
Everybody loves John Baxter around here. And I'm not going to lie, that would be a really interesting hire. If I kind of see it as like the Tony Sanchez hire, if they can surround him with like a lot of veteran coaches.
Hold on. This line, the con, I get never been a head coach. Second half, might be too eccentric for the job.
People love eccentricities. Why do you think Les Miles is so beloved?
I know. And Tony Sanchez so far. He's like, that's just a weird con. And then Trent Dilfer. I can't even mention.
Hard pass.
I think he'd rather what's his name? The Monday Night Football game replacing how do I not know his name? Not Sean McDonough, the other guy. Why am I blanking? I'm a dummy.
Are you talking about John Gruden?
Yes, John Gruden. I apologize. I'm like, what the heck? I pictured him in the VR from the other week in Monday Night Football. I apologize. John Gruden. Like, I think he'd rather wait for that job if it comes open than being a head college football coach. Who has, besides coaching high school guys in Elite 11, I don't think he has, zero coaching experience. Oh, and apparently, nice to point this out, he does not, the article here, does not have a bachelor's degree. That technically might be a requirement for jobs at a university. I don't know.
I have no idea.
Not to say whatever, that's his path is fine for NFL guy. A lot of those guys may not finish their degree, but to be a state employee, that technically might be a requirement. So can we make that technicality the reason why or not say, oh, you're out. Sorry, Trent.
Sure, why not?
All right, we've gone quite a bit longer. Anything else we need to add on this week 8? We had more games too, so we're only about 1:10, so that's not too bad.
You know what? Can we add one more thing? Because something that might be worth watching for in the future, if you're a New Mexico fan especially. Garrett Adcock ended his career because of concussions. So he was their starting right tackle. And, you know, for the one of the nation's best running games, that might be something to keep an eye on.
All right, we'll look on eye on that. So concussions, pretty it's a touchy subject. They're not good, let's just say that. And take some responsibility, people. NFL, NCAA, I mean, not players really, but coaches, come on. That's our show for this week. We'll have more news about this coaching hire. We already have about four or five stories up right now, maybe more. You probably convinced me out of writing an ill-advised piece about Lane Kiffin, so I think I'll leave that out of there just because I don't need to waste time on that, even though it might give us some clicks, but we'll see. That's our show, mwcconnection.com. That's our website. Thank you for... I don't know where you guys are coming from, but we've had huge bursts the past two of the past three shows. So thank you. The thousands of you who found our show and listened to it. I believe it's coming through iTunes, maybe. So maybe. Speaking of that, leave us a review at iTunes, Blog Talk Radio. You can't leave a review there, but listen to it there. Click on links on the page. That helps us out. Like we said, we want to get some more burrito money for the both of us to add.
Exactly.
We want to get us guacamole and sour cream. We want the extras. So, I guess if you're listening at this point, it doesn't matter, but I thought this was kind of funny. Just hit play as many times as you want, but put it on mute if you already heard us once. Let it roll through again. Can't hurt. And so, also real quick, Stitcher, we're trying to figure out what's all wrong with there. So, if you're using Stitcher.com, just go to our website, Blog Talk Radio, to find it there. They're working on why shows are kind of hit or miss for some reason, like every other show is on there. But that's our show for this evening. Thank you for everybody listening. MWCconnection.com. As always, we are biased against your team, and we're near. We're-